Good morning. You are listening to Conversations on WDRT Community Radio 91.9, coming to you from Viroqua, Wisconsin. Or you can stream on WDRT.org. I'm Mary Christensen, hosting this morning's program with our guest, Drew Shanka. These programs are available in the Conversations archives on WDRT in case you can't stay for the whole show or you want to listen to it again or find the link and send it to someone. So my guest today is Drew Shanka. We've known each other for quite a while, Drew.
22 years.
Oh, really? Oh, thanks for working it out, because I was wondering, when was it that you brought your family to Viroqua? Or that you came, actually we've known each other since you interviewed for a job at Pleasant Ridge Waldorf School.
And I believe that would have been May or June of 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so approaching 22 years. I came down from Minneapolis for an interview at Pleasant Ridge for a class teacher position.
Mm-hmm. And had you been at a Waldorf school before that with your kids? Or how did you know about Waldorf, and why did you come here?
Well, my wife, Jerry, and I, we discovered Waldorf education in a similar manner to so many people. We were young parents, and our oldest child was approaching school age. That was Leo. And we looked at all the schools in our neighborhood, the different types of schools, public schools, charter schools, private schools. We found City of Lakes Waldorf School in Minneapolis. And we both had that experience of walking into the school and taking a deep breath and saying, oh my, this is the school I wish I would have gone to.
Mm-hmm.
So we felt that that was right for Leo, and he attended first grade there. And I substitute taught there at the same time. So we became clear through that process that Waldorf education was right for our children, and at the same time we were exploring teaching. My wife, Jerry, was interested in becoming a teacher, and I played with the notion. I might be getting ahead of myself on the questions here, but what led me or led us to the decisions to come here included losing a job, the death of my father, a surprise pregnancy, and
wow.
My wife and I said, well, let's just throw it all away and start fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
And 6 months later, we were living in a small town in Wisconsin.
Yeah, what better place than Viroqua to start fresh, right?
So true. I had a job offer in Idaho, and we almost took it.
Hmm.
While I was in Idaho, I got a phone call from our colleague, Nanette, who said, we would like to offer you this job. And it was perfect because Viroqua, besides all of its other wonderful qualities, is just about equidistant from my family in Minneapolis and Jerry's family in Green Bay.
Right. That makes it really great when you're raising family.
Perfect.
Right. The kids get to see the grandparents often enough.
That's right.
And
but not too often.
Right.
You know, having a 3 or 4 hour drive is just right for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's so similar to our situation, too. I mean, we didn't experience the death and losing a job. It was mostly, dang, we can't afford this anymore here. And we don't want to work this work anymore. So what can we do? And it really meant the changing the whole thing.
That's right.
Because when you're in a metropolitan area, every metropolitan area holds the same claws on us in a certain way.
Yes, yes.
You know, so you have to, like, actually move out of it.
I love Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I have so much appreciation for it, having grown up there and seeing the things that it's doing now. But it's a city where if you live in the city, your five-year-old says, can I run outside and play? And the response is, well, you have to stay inside the fence.
Mm-hmm.
The day that we moved to Viroqua, our children asked the same question, and they ran across the field to play with children they'd never met before, something
mm-hmm.
we could never do in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
So arriving in the Driftless meant a big breath, mm-hmm. a breath of relief. There are no airplane sounds here. Political tensions are mostly kept to ourselves. We mm-hmm. try to be neighbors. Mm-hmm. So this was a perfect move for us.
So when was that again? 20?
We came in 2004.
2004, yeah.
We had
a sweet time, actually.
A 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a not yet 1-year-old. Mm-hmm. So our hands were full.
Mm-hmm. So what in your background, either experience-wise or education, led you to this desire to teach?
I always sought jobs or careers that I viewed as service. Mm-hmm. And for 14 years, well, I earned a degree in photography. At the same time, I burned out on photography, and I went into mental health and crisis intervention. So I did that crisis intervention work in St. Paul for roughly 14 years, and I enjoyed it. I appreciated it. I learned so much from it. But, yeah, 22, 23 years ago, I was burning out, and the rules changed, and I was no longer qualified to work in the position that I was, and I had a degree in photography, which doesn't help you that much in social services. So we did the big switch and mm-hmm. and went all in on Waldorf teaching and Waldorf for our children. But those were the circumstances that led to it. I viewed teaching as service work. I viewed teaching young children as maybe mental health on the front end. Instead of responding to broken lives, I was able to participate in forming positive experiences for children.
That's right. Yeah, I like that. On the front end, I kind of felt the same way, even if it was just for a few years to get Katrina off to a good start, it probably would be worth it.
Yes.
Even if we couldn't do it the whole, you know, whole way. And when we moved here, the school only went to fifth grade, sixth grade. So that was kind of like a risk of, well, we're going to jump in here. We'll go as long as we can, but we'll help build it up so that we can get it to eighth grade if possible.
You did the groundwork. When I arrived, the school was relatively established.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Not only me, there were a lot of other people who came before.
That is right.
It's always important to realize that whatever we're doing, we're on the shoulders of other people. There's always
so true.
Some ground that's we're on that's created the conditions for our work, allowed the freedom for our work, whatever, you know, the opportunity. Yeah. And the people coming, like you coming and other people coming every year, also is part of the magic that gave us room to develop as an organization.
That's right.
Right. Similar to what happens in Viroqua, too, where as other small towns all across the U.S. were losing population, wherever it was gaining, it had a little bit more lifeblood to it, right? More people to participate, that generation that was needed to do the work. So it was a blessing to come to a place that had a future, that felt like they had a future, who wanted to have a future.
Where people are building things.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, to meet Fred Nelson and the other elders of that time who were just putting their all into the Main Street program or, you know, their businesses trying to meet the needs of whoever was coming. It was really inspiring.
And we continue to learn about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a person who didn't grow up here, I have very little knowledge about what came before. And I'm constantly hearing stories and names and making the connections and appreciating, we have a hockey arena because of so-and-so, and this is what they did. And you know, I only met them at a party. I had no idea that they did this. Mm-hmm. And when I say hockey arena, what I really want to say is a thriving downtown with an amazing rate of occupied spaces and new businesses and small businesses. Viroqua is not a city with really strong chain business or franchise presence. It's a city of businesses that are started by locals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do, right?
Right.
And here I am at WDRT, which is another enterprise.
Right. That was the idea and dream of a few people and the hard work of many to get us here, which is really great.
Yes.
So, Drew, what was that? I know that there's a path for teachers in a Waldorf school who haven't had all the training necessarily of Waldorf methodologies and all that. But there is a path of becoming, right, of kind of unfolding yourself into this philosophy. There's a philosophy. There's
yes.
understanding of human development. There's the weaving of the arts and sciences. You know, what are the... I mean, you must have seen something there, a kernel of the wholeness.
Yes.
Given that you're an artist and you were a photographer, so you're into composing.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah, that word, becoming, really does describe it. I had some teaching experience prior to becoming a class teacher. Not much, and certainly not enough to call myself an expert, but I did have inspiration. And I had, well, I was in my 40s when I started teaching that first grade. So I had a career behind me in mental health. I had some coaching experience. Having lived in Germany for 3 years, it took me 10 years to get my BA, and that's not a bad thing. A lot of world travels, a ton of stories, and the inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
So the task of leading a class through 8 years, and for those listeners who aren't familiar with Waldorf education, in the optimal situation, a class teacher will take students in first grade and stay with the same group of children through eighth grade. So that task was daunting, to say the least. But it really was sort of the ultimate liberal arts career expression that if we had a Venn diagram, we'd say Waldorf education and living in Viroqua was the center of a place where the circles met, and the circles included religion and spirituality, the desire for strong community experience, the sanity of a small town, the affordability of a small town, the hope for community. You know, I'd like to know my neighbors and work with them, and it was just the right place for us. And so that idea of becoming... this is a daunting task, but we're going to move into it and do everything we can.
Right. But a lot of it is, or let's say, we focus on the class teacher. The role of the teacher is also to facilitate the community building of the class. So to have a strong network of relationships amongst the families that provide this circle of strength around the class.
That is absolutely right. It in Waldorf, you never just teach children. You really are building community. I don't remember who said this, and it might have been you, but I remember somebody saying that the whole point of Waldorf education is so that the adults can learn to get along with each other. Was that you?
I don't know, but that's how I felt about it.
Yeah. Working with children is challenging, and it's rewarding. Working with parents is far more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And working with colleagues to work with the children and the parents, I think, it, for me, was the most difficult of all. But we were committed to it, and of course the teachers at the school still are, and they're still working at it.
Well, it's because it's one of the tenets of Waldorf education is that we develop the individual in order to participate in a healthful and renewing aspect of social life, building up the culture, right?
Yes.
Reinvigorating the economic world, participating in the political world from a stance of strong individuality. And so how can you do it if you don't, like, if we don't mirror it in the adult community, the kids sniff it out. They go, you guys aren't honest.
That's right. That's right. Whatever we're doing in our community, the children are watching and they're learning.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can learn to not just get along, but regard each other with respect, with kindness, the children will notice that too. And they do, and hopefully we see it as they grow into their adulthood and start their own lives. They have lived and seen an example of people who are trying to do their best.
Right, and that's a good point, trying.
Trying,
because
always trying.
It's always trying, and it's the same thing with, like, disciplining children. We try to do our best. We try not to damage them, but we also have to give them guidance and boundaries and some rules along the way.
Absolutely.
To meet them wherever they are, what they need. Yeah.
Give them some structure,
mm-hmm.
Framework.
Mm-hmm. So would you say there were any highlights that you want to, since you like stories, is there a good story about
it? Oh, well, I think of every one of my former students as a highlight.
Oh, that's a good way.
Yeah. I counted them up. I think I had 20 students that graduated with me in 2012 and another 10 who started with our class and left early or joined us late and graduated with us. But totally, in total, there were probably 30 students. And I get to see them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to be amazed and delighted at their unfolding. And every one of them is a story, and every one of them has stories. So I track them. I happen to have somebody's phone number, and I call them on their birthday and completely surprise them. First time we've spoken in 8 years.
Wow.
I had lunch with one of my former students in Washington State last summer. Having experienced this together for 8 years, we will be together for the rest of my life, I'm hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
So that I would call that one of my great highlights is enjoying my former students as they're unfolding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's we have an opportunity to see how we wove this life together in a certain way. And that's one of the things I enjoyed about my daughter's class is that all of us became her family. I mean, all of, in a certain way.
Yes.
So the relationships are deep, they're intimate, they're full of ups and downs.
Yes.
There were challenges and all kinds of things, but there were a lot of fun projects we worked on together. So there's a real kind of family, almost extended family quality.
Absolutely.
At a time when you're raising a single child, there is no, I was raised in an extended family, but we couldn't give her that.
Right.
In the same way. So this was a good substitute.
One of the fun things about Viroqua is to see how the generations intermingle and celebrate together. And I've heard from people who visit here, they observe a party or a dance and they see, 8-year-olds and high school students and 30-something parents and 50-something parents celebrating together, dancing together. There's no apparent generation gap. these are the things that we're doing together. Sure, there are times when the high school students roll their eyes at their parents, but we've been through so much together. Of course, like any place, sometimes people pass away, and we endure that together too. Yeah. That becomes our shared history, mm-hmm. and it binds us to each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to take a little station break here to remind everyone that we're listening to the Conversations program on WDRT Community Radio, 91.9 Viroqua, coming to you from Viroqua, Wisconsin. You can also stream the program on WDRT.org. Go to Conversations Archives and see or be able to listen to this link later. And actually, while you're there, look at all the other amazing programs. It's just this program, it's been going on for, I don't know how many years now, at least. I don't know, almost 10. But yeah. There are a lot of wonderful stories about people, places, ideas, and so tune in. Let's see, I didn't say that my name is Mary Christensen, and I'm talking today with Drew Shanka, from a photographer here in Viroqua. We've been talking about your move to Viroqua and all of that, but then after teaching for 8 years, you graduated your class and went on to explore other aspects of life in the Driftless.
That's for sure. We live in a unique and wonderful time and place, I think. And I would describe that as a place that affords us the opportunity to change hats or change horses in midstream.
Right.
I know that people I've met and gotten to know in Korea and Germany, for example, can't just say, I'm tired of being a policeman, I think I want to be a teacher. But in the USA, and I recognize this as being partly due to my own privilege, but I have the opportunity to say, I'm done working in mental health, I want to be a teacher, or I'm done being a teacher, I want to be a photographer. In 2012, after I graduated my class at Pleasant Ridge, I exercised that option again. I said to myself, well, I've never tried self-employment. I'd like to see if I can do that. And I would like to use the degree that I earned back in 1991 and something that I've always had in me. It may be hereditary. My grandfather was a professional photographer. I'd like to give it a go. So I started this business with a lot of support from my wife, Jerry, and a lot of support from our community. And I guess I'm at year 12 or so right now. I started in 2014, where I went full-time, and it's gone really well. Hmm. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
That's great.
And I view it as another service job. When I was younger, I thought, oh, service work had to be helping professions, and it wouldn't necessarily be something like photography or self-employment. But in reality, I think every job affords us the opportunity to be of service to our community, and I really feel that with the photography. When I'm doing it well, I am supporting my community.
Say a little bit more about that.
Well, at the bottom of my website, I have a Thomas Merton quote, and it says, there's just no way to tell people. They're all walking around shining like the sun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I love it. I feel a little bit ashamed to quote it because I can't live up to it all the time. You know, sometimes I'm not at my best, but there are moments when I am, and When I'm in sync, when I'm doing my best, it isn't just the act of taking a photo or making a photo. It's really the act of connecting with another individual or another group, affirming them, supporting them, building them up.
Seeing them.
seeing them. That is it.
Mm-hmm.
That is it.
And we all want to be seen.
We want to be seen.
Yeah.
I think I told you the story about, you know my three children.
Mm-hmm.
And as small children, two of them were loud and expressed their needs very clearly. I respect them for that. And one of them was very quiet. And I think that she was quiet because she saw how exhausted mommy and daddy could be from being parents and trying to make a living. But the quiet one left me a little post-it note, and I still have that somewhere. But on the post-it note, she wrote, "Can you see me?"
Wow. Wow, that's, oof. That's really almost tough.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
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 And Jerry and I took that to heart.
Yeah.
And we still do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only do we want to see our children, but we know that we need to see each other. We need to see everybody in our community and recognize,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they're here and that we should be engaged with others.
Yeah, engaged. Wow. That's really, thank you for telling us that story. It's a deep one.
I shared that story recently, and I know I've got to find that little post-it note and frame it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not just about that one child. It's mm-hmm. about all of us all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had one left in my desk drawer.
I'll bet you do.
And it was more like I love you with a smile, kind of telling me to smile more.
Mm.
You know, there was a little bit of coaching going, or I don't know, something about it hit me. Like, oh, I have to be flowing more in that way.
Yes.
Yeah. Not, yeah.
Be light, bring the joy.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And what a gift it is, I want to say, for you to see that note and learn that lesson and continue to learn that lesson. And that's a gift that I share.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really grateful that I can look at a piece of paper and continue to learn from it.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, so more, I remember some of those early years when you were working as a professional photographer of taking like prom pictures and class, you started doing class or individual student pictures at Pleasant Ridge, and those were so great. You, capturing the spirit of these kids.
Yeah, that's funny that you bring that up. I often say, for photographers, generally speaking, doing school photography or sports team photography is perhaps the least sexy job possible. You know, many photographers want to shoot movie stars and dramatic landscapes, travel photography, famous people. Who really wants to do school photography? Well, it wasn't high on my list, but starting this business and being a part of the Pleasant Ridge community, as well as part of the Driftless United soccer community, as well as part of the Viroqua Area Hockey Association community, those were sports that my children played, I had the opportunity to do school photos and sports teams photos. And I have to tell you, it's different when it's your community.
Mm-hmm.
The seniors in high school this year that I was able to photograph, I knew as babies. I've been here that long. When I arrived, the seniors weren't born yet.
Wow.
So I've been here their whole lives, and in some situations, I guess I've done this, the Pleasant Ridge photos for 12 years. I'll bet you I have photos of some of the children K through 12.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a part of their community, when your wife, Jerry, still teaches at Pleasant Ridge, when your studio is on the same floor as Youth Initiative High School, you know the kids. Mm-hmm. You grow with them. You see them change from babies into toddlers into grade schoolers into adult men and women. And it's thrilling. Mm-hmm. It's so fun. And I think you paid me a compliment a moment ago that the pictures are good photos or that they really mm-hmm. show the child. That's what I'm hoping for. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take a snapshot. I don't want bad lighting and a plain expression. I take a photo of Freya in her hockey uniform, and I want her soul. And in that particular one, she gave it to me.
That's what I was thinking. You know them, and they know you.
Yes.
And so that removes that barrier between. And so a lot of your photos have that liveliness that makes you kind of wonder, I wonder what they were just talking about.
Yeah.
You know, like something that spurred that smile or that, yeah. And look, something
you know,
through the eyes.
When I take the first photo, I have a general awareness of what parents want from a photo. There are some parents who will say, I really want my child to smile nice for the photo. And other parents will say, I want the truth. Don't ask my child to smile. But when I take the first photo, I never ask for the smile. I don't say smile for the camera, especially with the little ones, because the little ones will tell you the truth right away. And it comes out in their eyes and their facial expression. If they're afraid, if they're seeing through me, if they're in a good place or a bad place, it is apparent in that photo, and you have to capture that, the truth. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in some situations I know, mom and dad are going to want to smile, and I'll gently encourage the child to smile and see if we can get a good picture that way. But there's no better photo, in my opinion, of one where the subject tells you the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the camera can catch that, right?
I sure hope so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so how about working with the teens?
The teams are beyond Pleasant Ridge, beyond Youth Initiative High Schools, where I've taught. So that's part of the larger community, and they include children from nearby towns and cities. But there again, two of my three children played driftless soccer, and three of my children played, all three of the children played hockey, and two of the three children went far in hockey. So I really got to grow up in those sub-communities as well and work with a greater variety of people. And of course, this is an enterprise that supports me financially. I appreciate that. I get to work with these programs year after year, and I think I get similar results. You know, sometimes those photos really pop and maybe contain truth. Mm-hmm. You know, tell you the truth about a child and where they're at, and hopefully I'm succeeding in doing them artistically as well. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm striving for. It's not just a photo. So many of the photos in our world are just photos, and you get them over with, and you know, you give me a check, I hand you a photo. No, I want a portrait. Mm-hmm. I really want something that's beautiful and remarkable and real. Mm-hmm. Truth and beauty.
Right. Right. Must take a lot of editing or a lot of, let's say, how many pictures you have to take in order to get those.
Yeah.
Lots.
Sometimes with a particular child, you might take 60 photos to get the last one which works. But more often than that, it's the first photo that's the best. Hmm. So it will vary. And, of course, this is the age of digital.
So, I was thinking that, too. So yeah. You can do it, right?
That's right. It had to be much more difficult to do all of this on film, mm-hmm. where you don't get that feedback loop, and you really have to, you have to see through your camera and keep an eye on your subject at the moment you're hitting the shutter. It is possible to know if you've got a good picture without viewing it on your screen afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I really enjoy digital, and the fact that if I need to, if I'm shooting a subject, say a farmer for Organic Valley, I can shoot 1,000 pictures to get the 10 keepers.
Mm-hmm.
That was harder to do with film.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what kinds of work did you do at Organic Valley? I mean,
well, I worked with pools. I didn't go directly through the marketing department, but I was hired by other players, other managers in the co-op. My initial series of jobs was photographing farmers, and not for marketing, not for milk carton type photos, but more of the storytelling, the reality of what it's like to be a farmer. So manure on the boots and the broken down tractor, those were things that showed up in my pictures. And I was able to go with the co-op to Minnesota, North Dakota, Ohio, Kentucky. I was privileged to be able to photograph the plain communities for Organic Valley, and that's the Mennonites and the Amish that make up a large percentage of their co-op membership. I was able to photograph the Amish out in Kentucky and Ohio, and that was really thrilling too.
Pretty amazing.
We don't get to do that in the Driftless area because, generally speaking, the Amish are more conservative here.
Mm-hmm.
But the co-op membership and the Amish and Mennonite farmers out in the Midwest, say Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, are a little more willing to be photographed. They always say, you can take a picture of me. I won't smile for the camera, so don't ask me to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have at it. It's difficult at first, but after a while you kind of lean into it and it becomes a great adventure.
It's amazing. I never really thought about it. But I suppose all this dovetails with the internet too, with being able to tell those stories, to have a platform for getting that out. What do you think? And that, like, because they didn't use all of them in print, did they? I mean, they did have a print whatever medium for a while.
Yeah, I guess there are still paper brochures somewhere, mm-hmm. and there's a calendar. Some of my images were used for their calendar work. There's a weekly newsletter that Crop used, and Crop, I mean, the Coulee Region Organic Produce Pool that became Organic Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So there is still print out there, mm-hmm. and, of course, there are pictures on the wall.
Mm-hmm. I loved it when you made those really big pictures, the big format, printed big format that was like in the Driftless Cafe. You had a series for a while.
That's right. And there's still one in the Driftless Cafe, 4 feet by 6 feet of Amish farmers.
Hmm.
That's great fun.
Yeah.
Wonderful experiences.
Yeah.
And... yeah, what was the scope of my work with Organic Valley? A couple years ago, I was able to visit many of our local meat producers for the Organic Prairie brand, which is no longer functioning in the same way. But I had the opportunity to photograph 10 or 12 different farmers in the area.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's take another little station break here to remind our listeners. You're listening to Conversations, WDRT 91.9 on your dial. And if you want to stream this, it's WDRT.org, or go to archives and listen to the program later. My name is Mary Christensen, and I'm speaking this morning with Drew Shanka, a local photographer who's had a really rich life here these last 20 years. Some years.
It's been great.
And and it's interesting the different jobs that you've had too, how it just shows how many aspects there are to a private company or a business or a just in your life, how many layers you can work in, you know, from individual, probably family portraits, class portraits, you know, the sports, into the company, and what else?
You know, occasionally I work as a photojournalist. I don't do it enough to call myself a photojournalist, but I know that I get to do that sometimes. And to be a photojournalist is similar to being a journalist in that you get to go everywhere and do just about everything and learn about anything at all, and you never know what's coming next. That's one of the things I love about this job and this work is, in addition to photographing my daughter's hockey team and the school pictures for Pleasant Ridge, I get to go to Ohio and photograph farmers for Organic Valley, or I photographed a surf camp in Morocco 6 years ago.
Wow.
I got to photograph and write an article for a college alumni magazine about an urban planner in Paris. You just never know where you're going to go next. I photographed in Lima, Peru a year and a half ago, and you get to learn about all these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fascinating, and I'm insatiably curious, sometimes to my own detriment. But, you know, if you told me that I could photograph a woodworker in the mountains of Japan, I'm all over it.
No kidding.
I just want to do that.
I'll carry your camera base.
Yes, let's do it. Let's go. I did get to do that. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
That was a spontaneous job. Some of these jobs are well planned out, and that's one that just popped up.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the best afternoon of the trip.
Meeting
Oiwa Kosho.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Neat. So what's on your landscape? What are you doing like now? You also are working back in social services sometimes.
That's right. I've looped back into social services in a small way. So whereas 23 years ago I was helping run a program for crisis intervention and the system in St. Paul, when COVID hit 6 years ago, photography became less essential and mentoring at-risk youth was essential, and I was able to start a part-time job with Trailhead Therapy and Mentoring, which is based here in Viroqua. And I began to work with 2, 3, 4 kids at a time, and that's very rewarding. It's wonderful to be able to do that work one-to-one. My numbers of clients ebbs and flows, but for the last year or so, I've had just one, and I've been working with this child for 6 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, of course, I can't tell you anything about the child, and that's okay. We have privacy rules. But I can say comfortably that we're enjoying each other's company, and I'm hopeful that I'm helping him grow in a healthy way and giving him the attention, the positive attention that he otherwise wouldn't get.
Mm-hmm.
You might say, I'm trying to see him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'll do that today. I get to go work mm-hmm. for Trailhead today.
Mm-hmm. Some wonderful colleagues that you have there.
That's right.
Amazingly rich community within this community.
That's right.
Right.
A lot of the people who come to Viroqua to be organic farmers or participate in the Waldorf community, or whatever reason they come for, Viroqua has drawn a tremendous amount of creativity and talent to it. So we go about our business. We have our coffee and walk down the street and drop off a letter at the post office. When you stop and engage with people and start talking to them and find out who they are and what they have to offer, the surprises never cease. There's so much talent and creativity. And for the purposes of Trailhead, I think there's a lot of empathetic social worker types, you know, not necessarily social workers, but people who work well in human services for the support of their communities.
Mm-hmm.
We have a terrific team at Trailhead.
Yeah, it's very inspiring to me because there is so much, let's say, potential and really reward in doing this one-on-one work with each other. I mean, whether we're adults or whether it's an adult with child, it's so necessary in many. I mean, it is necessary, period. And
yes.
Our modern society has kind of fractured a lot of that.
Yes.
Right? Those opportunities.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, so now I have a grandson who is going to need a lot of that because of his birth experience, because, you know. And when I saw, when I was out visiting recently and saw the different physical therapist, occupational therapist, who else did we see, speech therapist, come to the house and do these little half-hour meetings, and to see him be so excited to see them because they bring some joy, something new to him, you know, this the interaction that's so important that helps him wake up and in his body make the connections that it's just going to take a little extra than most normal sort of unfolding.
Yes.
And wow, it's so important, and it's so grateful that for the people who do that, and that the services are here, that we're in our society, we're able to access services like that. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And when the services don't exist, isn't it wonderful if we have the initiative and the ability to recognize that the need is there?
True.
I wrote a blog post recently, and I basically said, we need you. And by you, I don't mean you in particular or me in particular. I mean all of us need all of us to check in and participate, you know, for the sake of this kid that I work with,
mm-hmm.
or your grandchild,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, whoever you're living next to. The need is there. The people in our communities desperately need to be connected with.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not paying attention, then I'm not participating. But when I'm tuned in and taking good enough care of myself, things are going well, I have a lot to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And you do too.
Yeah, and we all do.
Yes.
Right, and it is going back to being seen first, right?
Yes.
Really being seen and then met and then allowing an involvement, a connection.
Mm-hmm. And what else is there, right? I guess it would be fun to be famous, and it would be interesting to be rich, and, you know, I don't know. What I really want, whether I am working as a photographer or a teacher or a baker or a driver, you know, any of these things that I've already done, what I really hope for is to be of service in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these occupations, no matter what you're doing, you can be of service.
Mm-hmm. Right. Your photography, you're helping people make memories, capturing a really special moment for them.
Affirming them,
mm-hmm.
seeing them, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we get some good images out of it, which is really fun.
Right. So you mentioned in that last couple of minutes ago about your writing.
Okay.
Blog
yeah.
post. You started a Substack.
I did.
Right? When was? And tell people what that is.
Sure. Recently, my friend Hal asked me, "Well, Drew, what are you going to do with all those photos?" And it turned out he was asking about the particular photos that I took of a large animal veterinarian on a given day last summer. But when he asked the question, I heard it as, "What are you going to do with all those photos?" I thought of the million images that I have on all these hard drives and the framed pictures that are gathering dust in the garage, the binders of negatives, all these things that have accumulated over, 40-plus years of photography and 12 years of running this business. So I had to answer that for myself. What am I going to do with all these photos? What good are they? Are they just going to gather dust and be forgotten? Or can I talk about them? Can I share them? I could have a show. I'm sure I'll have another show, and maybe I'll hang 20 photos on the wall. But this idea of a blog or a Substack affords me the opportunity to share photos. Might be one at a time. It might be 20 at a time. But to talk about them and tell the stories, explore topics. I started the Substack, started publishing it last summer, and I call it The Study of Light, which is a very succinct definition of photography, but suggestive of so much more, mm-hmm. right? What are we talking about today? We're talking about the light in many of its forms.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I hope for, is to continue to use photography and engagement and service to study the light, and the blog explores that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's what I hear in that is the light in people's eyes.
Yes.
How their soul comes through, how their spirit shows up.
Yes.
And things like that.
Yeah. That's right.
We actually got very philosophical during our little tea the other day when we were talking about this program, that there's so many metaphors like that.
That's right.
In the world of photography.
That's right.
Development.
That's right.
Follow that word out for a while.
Yeah. Well, light. Mm-hmm. Light, that's our first one, right?
Right.
The light means a lot of different things, and they're all good. The word development, photographers develop pictures, and that's an easy go-to for a metaphor. I like to think that we are all about development. We're mm-hmm. developing each other,
mm-hmm.
right? We're developing ourselves. Aperture is another great word. Camera lenses have apertures, and aperture means opening. You know, the open window is mm-hmm. an aperture. The open heart is an aperture. The open mind is an aperture.
Beautiful.
So I like to play with these words. Mm-hmm. And I like to play with them with you because you understand what I'm talking about. We do become philosophical.
We do.
Yeah.
Let's see. And we talked about education and imprint, right? That education has this quality of opening up and, you know, allowing this unfoldment. But there also is an imprint aspect of experience has an effect on us. Right, so a lot of things are paradoxical, too. It's, I don't know. Or we can have education that's by default. We were talking about that.
Right.
Rather than one that's really pursues a conscious.
That's right. You know, that's right. Our schools that you and I have been so involved with are anything but default, right? We're going at it with intention, doing the best that we can.
Mm-hmm. We talked about conversation and dialogue and how that's an aspect of an education that allows this unfolding. And I suppose as a photographer, you're establishing that also with your subjects.
That's what I hope for, mm-hmm. is to be in a process with others where the unfolding happens,
mm-hmm.
the learning, the growth, the seeing one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a thrill, right? It's really a connection is a spark. We all have some spark of life in us, yeah. So, Drew, do you want to tell people how to connect with you again, how to get to your Substack?
Sure, sure. Substack, you don't have to You don't have to belong or pay or even have a registered account. I think you can just log on and look up The Study of Light
by
Drew Shanka Photography. That's one thing that I'm really passionate about and looking forward to growing. I also have a website where you can see some of my work, and that is drewshonkaphotography.com, drewshonkaphotography.com. And, you know, the usual Facebook pages, Instagram type things. But I do suppose that if you're local to Viroqua, you'll find me.
Right.
We know where we are. You'll find me bent over a patch of moss taking a picture, or maybe over at Wonder State having an afternoon coffee.
Mm-hmm. And you have such a broad interest and broad experience that who knows what people need. They can come to you without fear, kind of like you'll get them on board with their ideas.
I still haven't specialized. So
that's it.
It'll be surf camp in Morocco. It'll be medical supplies, family portraits, marketing support for businesses. I am happy to give it all a go.
Great.
Still having fun with the variety of it all.
Great. Well, I look forward to getting on this Substack and seeing more of what you've done, because I haven't been paying attention about that. I see your photos on Facebook a lot and stuff like that. But anyway, thank you so much for coming and sharing your life story here.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for asking me. You're welcome. Thanks for seeing me.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.